This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Women and people of color in the workforce earn less on average than do white male workers. This wage gap in the Ohio Valley region hovers around 20%. Becca Schimmel explores why the gap persists and how it affects workers in an economy shifting toward more service sector jobs.
Mackenzie Cantrell is an employment lawyer working with refugees and immigrants to uncover instances of wage theft and income disparities.
You know, sometimes you can just see on someone's face the fact that they have lost money over the course of their career, and it really affects you as someone who doesn't want to see working people lose money and struggle in a low-income job.
Many of Cantrell's clients work in the service and construction sectors, and many are women and minorities. Data from the Economic Policy Institute shows a persistent wage gap for women and minorities in the Ohio Valley region and across the country. In Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia, an African-American worker will earn on average 82 cents for every dollar a white worker earns. For women, it's about 78 cents.
This is something that's kind of enduring, and it's really the result of structural problems in our labor market.
That's Amy Hanauer, an economist with Policy Matters Ohio, a labor-leaning policy institute. She says it's easy to blame a lack of education or choice of field for the wage gap, but it's not that simple.
It's the result of problems with the jobs that we offer, much more than it's the result of problems with the people taking the jobs.
As jobs in mining and manufacturing have dwindled, low-wage service sector jobs have grown. Hanauer argues there is a disproportionate amount of women and minorities in these jobs. She says this is partly due to historic discrimination, which puts people in these demographics at a disadvantage.
Well, if we just made sure that all of these jobs paid better, that would go part of the way toward reducing the disparity.
Hanauer says raising the minimum wage would bring up the bottom, which would begin to address wage gaps. That's part of the argument behind a national movement called Fight for 15. Demonstrators like these want to see the minimum wage rise to $15 an hour. Hanauer notes, when minimum wage laws were established, many jobs in agriculture and domestic jobs were excluded, which contributed to the wage gap we see today.
Well, those were the jobs that many women and certainly most African Americans held at that time. So from the very beginning, Black Americans were excluded from the most basic form of labor protection.
But other economists doubt whether the wage gap solution lies in a minimum wage increase. Western Kentucky University economist Suzanne Leguizamon says the wage gap can't be adequately explained solely by the low minimum wage.
So you may see people starting at minimum wage, but even in the low skill sector, they don't tend to stay there very long.
Leguizamon says if a higher minimum wage pushes employers to hire fewer people, that could exacerbate disadvantages that women and minorities have, and what seems like evidence of workplace discrimination might be the result of other factors at play.
Some researchers have argued quite likely that there is some discrimination going on, but it's important not to suggest it just solely based on the presence of a wage gap.
While economists work to better explain wage gaps, employment lawyers like Mackenzie Cantrell will keep sorting through complaints case by case.
Work in general has changed where you have people working multiple jobs or multiple part-time jobs, and that does affect the number of clients or cases who may be affected by this issue.
Service sector employment in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia has grown by 16% since 2000. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. It's been two decades since the opioid epidemic first exploded across Appalachia, and now doctors are shifting away from prescribing opioids for long-term pain. But how does this affect those who are suffering from chronic pain? Inside Appalachia producers asked listeners to share stories about this issue. We'll hear Aaron Klein, who was injured in a car accident, James McCormick, an Army veteran who was shot several times in combat, and Jennifer Boyle, who was injured while giving birth to one of her children.
I'm 33 years old, and I've been living with chronic pain for about 13 years. It's frustrating because it never goes away. The only time that I'm not in pain is when I'm asleep. Imagine the worst headache you've ever had, one that would make you call in sick to work and stay in bed all day. Now imagine that it never goes away, and you have to live the rest of your life, day in and day out, with that headache. That's what it's like to have chronic pain. Unfortunately, there is a huge opioid abuse problem in West Virginia, and this can further create a barrier for someone with chronic pain. I think often people associate chronic pain patients with someone who is addicted to drugs, and although a chronic pain patient may be physically dependent on the medication they take to control their pain, that doesn't mean they're abusing their medication. I find that massage therapy, physiotherapy, chiropractic care, and even restorative yoga can be helpful. I think it would also be helpful to have a therapist to deal with the stress, anxiety, and depression that can come along with chronic pain. And it can also be really lonely. I think I'm a pretty happy and positive person, but sometimes it's hard to find the energy to be happy and positive when you're in so much pain all the time. If you met me, I don't think you would know that I was in pain all the time unless I told you or we spent a lot of time together. I think people with chronic pain tend to get really good at hiding the fact that they're in pain.
When you have anxiety on top of pain, it makes the pain 10 times worse. And essentially, I was taking a pill to help you sleep, a pill to help you deal with pain, a pill to help you deal with everyday life's ups and downs, your Prozacs and your mood-altering pills is what I would call them. When you started looking at how they interacted with each other, you know, it was potentially dangerous.
Doctors are often telling me that I need to learn to live with it, but yet no one gives me the tools to learn to live with it. It's been very difficult living in West Virginia with chronic pain because most of the doctors don't want to deal with chronic pain patients, and the ones that do are so far away that I have to travel an hour and a half for each monthly appointment. More than anything, I wish people would just remember that there's a lot of us who didn't ask to have chronic pain. We have no say in it, but we do have to live with it. And just counting us in as people who are looking for drugs and forgetting that we have lives and jobs and families, and we'd do anything to have a treatment where we would never have to be considered a chronic pain patient again.